This is the Remote Podcast, and I'm your host, Victor Kung. You're listening to episode 25. Hello, and welcome to the Remote Podcast, episode 25. This podcast is all about location independence, digital nomadism, and living life on your own terms. Each week, we interview a new guest on the show, and this week, I sat down with Jeff Sloan, the head of business intelligence at eMove and a participant on the Remote Year program. Jeff and I both attended the University of Chicago, and back when I knew him, he was an aspiring DJ. In this interview, Jeff shares his experiences from living in his parents' basement after graduating from college to becoming a participant on the Remote Year program, all within a two-year time span. He also shares his experiences as part of Remote Year now that he's in his final month. I've learned so much from this interview. It's a fantastic mix of personal development and travel, so I know you'll enjoy it too. Hey, what's up, Jeff? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Victor?
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to sharing my experience.
Yeah, so to quickly introduce you to my audience, Jeff Sloan is the head of business intelligence at eMove.co and a participant on Remote Year. And Jeff and I actually both attended the University of Chicago. And back when I knew him in school, he was still just an aspiring DJ. So we've been out of touch for a few years until I think one day you actually commented on one of my LinkedIn posts about doing a program similar to Remote Year. So I'm sure a whole lot has happened in the last few years. So I'm looking forward to just hearing the story of how you went from aspiring DJ to remote worker.
Certainly, it's a lot, so I'll do my best to keep it concise.
Yeah, awesome. So to start us off, why don't you share with us like how you became a remote worker? Like basically, take me from when I knew you in college to now.
Certainly. So I am, as kind of hinted off, I'm kind of early in my career, in my mid 20s, and once I graduated, I wanted to do a million different things, and I never imagined that I would be in the position I am today, working remotely and traveling. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write a book. I wanted to start a company. I wanted to do something with social impact, save the dolphins, a ton of different things. And as a consequence of my indecision around wanting to do all these things at the same time, I ended up after graduation exactly where no 22-year-old wants to be, which was in his parents' basement. So actually, the road from there has been a big J curve in a great way, and it's all worked out in the best ways. So how that happened is I began taking up some freelance writing opportunities, began working for a startup. And really, as I went, just started picking up as much as I could wherever I was, doing the work that other people were not willing to do in order to learn as much as possible. And that thinking, including taking some online classes around data analysis and IT, led me to being hired by a software company in Philadelphia called RJ Metrics at the time. It's since been acquired by Magento. And from there, they took me as somebody who knew very, very little about databases, SQL, whatever, and they taught me all the skills that I would need in order to handle everything from the IT side of data analysis all the way down to the actual dashboarding and decision-making side. And that skill set set me up actually very, very well for the next leap, which was moving into a location-independent role. So I'll kind of stop there because that's where I go into Remote Year. And do you have any questions about that?
Yeah, so it sounds like when you graduated from school, you kind of started, it's like you started from scratch. Like you had to learn everything from scratch. And I'm curious to dive into your mindset back then, because you mentioned how you started doing freelance writing opportunities and then you started working in a startup and you tried to learn everything you can. How did you really decide what you wanted to learn? Because I can imagine, you know, coming out of college and living at home in your parents' basement, that can be pretty maybe psychological trauma or like dense your pride, because I'm sure a lot of college students, millennials especially, when they leave school, they have very high expectations for where they are. And I'm really interested to get more deep into your mindset back then and into your decision making.
Certainly. So I think you're hitting on a key thing here, which is expectations versus the reality after graduation. And my expectations were pretty high, as I think many many college grads have them. And the move back home was rough. You know, you go from having a ton of friends around you, social opportunities, learning so much in school to essentially stepping on Velcro back in the suburbs with my parents. And it did feel like failure. It felt a lot like failure and was probably one of the, I mean, ultimately it taught me a ton, but moving through that failure and beginning to look at the opportunities around me set me up to where I am today. And it's, of course, hindsight being 2020, you can see how one thing kind of kinetically leads into the other. And if I weren't in Philadelphia, then I wouldn't have started taking all these online classes. If I weren't in Philadelphia, I wouldn't have improved my technical writing. If I weren't in Philadelphia, I wouldn't have started working with this startup, this little e-commerce startup that basically gave me free rein to be the technical guy in the room with the little knowledge I had. And off the back of all that, that landed me my first real job with the startup in Philadelphia that taught me the rest of what I know in order to do this job well and do it remotely. So it's at the time it was hard and it felt like my back was against a wall, certainly. But what I'd say I'd learned as a result of it is that in those cases, so long as you feel like your nose is pointed in the right direction, you just got to put in the work and try to get as much out of every opportunity. Every, I guess, 30 minutes feeling sorry for yourself, that could have been another job application or could have been 30 minutes, whether hitting the gym or taking another class or doing something to push yourself forward and keep yourself going forward. Those 30 minutes are better spent there than kind of wallowing in you know, an expectation of where you should be in the race in your 20s.
Yeah. And this is all in hindsight, but take me back to when you're like in the basement of your parents' house and you feel like how you describe, your back's against the wall, you have a lack of sense of direction. How did you, obviously there's no silver bullet, but how did you take steps to take control of your life and to find the right direction to go? Because I know this is a big issue for many college graduates, myself included, where you go through this phase where you're just not sure if you're on the right path and you have to somehow take ownership of your life, something that us as people who are fortunate enough to go through the education system, get a higher level education, we never really have to do that because everything's typically, we're just moving through a system, through a structure. So could you take me back to then and take me through your decision-making process? Because I think that's really where so many people never even overcome that. They just follow whatever path that's laid out for them. And I think in that sense, we are enlightened or in other words, fortunate to be able to carve out our own paths.
I gotcha. Yeah. So when I was back at home and feeling like I did and, you know, looking at all of the Facebook photos that were coming in of people moving to their new brand new cities and starting their brand new lives and having a lot of fun, the thing that got me through and the thing that allowed me to, it was kind of my guiding light in all of it, was just trying to let go of the need to have it all and have it all right now. Instead, I started thinking, okay, what improves my situation today? And whether that be learning something because I have the time and I think it'll be useful, or maybe it won't be useful, but it will be interesting and it will tell me, it will give me some information as to whether or not this is something I want to dive deeper into. Whether that's, you know, in the case of this freelance writing, I actually saw it via a friend on Facebook posting, hey, I'm looking for somebody to help me with this project, you know, saying, okay, I've always wanted to write and this is an opportunity. And what else am I doing? So what does this do for me today? It gives me some beer money. It gives me something, a little bit of flexibility today. And one thing leading to another, using that decision-making process of, does it make me better and does it put me off into a better place and open more doors today, was a lot more healthy, a lot healthier and a lot more productive than trying to find the perfect thing off the bat. I think that's frequently the trap that a lot of young people fall into is wanting the perfect thing right away. And ultimately, I think being honest with yourself and being honest with the people that you're working with, a lot of people are looking for bright young minds who want to learn and want to do maybe some of the dirty work, but just be taught why it's important along the way. And they don't expect that person to stay for super long periods of time. So there's lots of opportunities, I think, out there for people who are enterprising and willing to learn and excited to learn about a particular thing. And so long as that aligns with something that you might have had interest in college or thinking about exploring, I say go for it. At the end of the day, it gives you information about whether this is something that you wanted to do. And at the end of 3 months, even if it's 2 months or 3 months, and you've puddle jumped from opportunity to opportunity to opportunity, you have way more information and way more valuable skills that can be put towards landing something that might be a little bit more meatier. And you'll actually know that it's a meaty opportunity, right, and an important opportunity for you once you get it. So I'd say just start running towards the thing that you think is going to be interesting. Throw yourself into it and don't be afraid to back out of it if it's not interesting within several months, even weeks, you know, because you're just trying to figure it out. And I think you do that a bunch of times and you'll end up in a better place in a year by trying and failing or trying and learning than trying to envision this perfect thing from the start.
Totally. And it seems like, you know, your approach was really skills acquisition and trying to learn, participate in things that you have an interest in and just being a sponge. Being opportunistic and taking all the opportunities that come your way, trying new things. And it's interesting because this is kind of similar to what Charles, who's also on your cohort from Remote Year, he talked about it and he approached it from a very UX perspective, like the idea of experimentation, rapid prototyping to really answer the different hypotheses you have in your head. Like, oh, I've always liked writing. Why don't I try some freelance writing? And then within a few months, you should get a pretty good idea of whether or not it is for you. So I'm definitely on board with that. And that's definitely something that I had to learn to do as well. Because ultimately, after you leave school, you become responsible for your education. And education in the real world is very different, at least from education at the University of Chicago, as I'm sure you remember.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very theoretical. I will say that education has been super, super impactful and super helpful, but it definitely gave me no hard skills to apply towards a job.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about higher level education these days. And that's like something that we could talk about forever. But so you started doing all these freelancing things. You became open to opportunities that came your way, and then you landed your first job at the startup doing more technical work. You said you had to learn about data analysis. And was that something you always had an interest in, or was it something that you were just open to the opportunity to learn, and then it quickly became, you know, your thing?
So data analysis was always something that was on my radar and something that I'd enjoyed. When I went to the University of Chicago, one of the key drivers behind me going to the University of Chicago and studying economics was not so much the desire to go into finance or consulting or take any of these that theoretical training that's useful for breaking down concepts within these two fields.
Right.
But instead, it was the research aspect. I really enjoyed reading Freakonomics in high school, and research just kind of inspired me and felt very, very, very creative.
Uh-huh.
So in school, I actually did a couple projects for classes doing research with data. And then I took an internship in Chile and worked on models of immigration flows between the countries.
Mm-hmm.
So data, working with data had been in my background, but never business data. And generally all this data had been prepped and cleaned. And I never had to worry about the IT systems that went into place to get right. this data and then applying it towards businesses. On the other side, I was interested in startups, and that's how you and I met, is through the entrepreneurship, the interest in entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. that ecosystem at the University of Chicago.
That's right.
And so the idea of putting these two together had always kind of been on the map, so to speak. It's just that there wasn't the bridging, I guess, concepts and tools or skills with the tools necessary. And that's really in the business world, it's like, or in the tech world, it's SQL and an understanding of these IT systems, as well as like startup KPIs, to bring those two and marry those two sides together. That's what this company was willing to do for me, is like they saw the raw materials there and they were willing to fill in that gap. And like, I owe them a ton because they put in hours into training me to do that type of work.
Yeah, so definitely it was a very opportunistic thing, just happened to tick all the boxes. So I think that's awesome, because it's great to find a company that fulfills all those requirements. And So that's really the skills acquisition part. You finally found, you know, the job that was the right fit for you. But where did the location dependent digital nomad, where does all of that come into play? Because we haven't really talked about any of that yet. So I'm very curious how you went from that to participating on a program like Remote Year, because that seems to me like a very, very big jump.
Yeah, and it was a huge jump. And I think a lot of people thought I was kind of crazy for making it and kind of surprised to hear it. So even though I was making all this progress, I had tested writing, I had started working for a little e-commerce startup, and then I landed a real big opportunity in Philadelphia that was going to train me and do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I moved into Philly and out of my parents' basement in the suburbs.
Right.
I always imagined myself, I guess, trying to tackle three mountains in my life. There's three things that I knew that I want to do in some way and work towards in some way. And even though I was happier and happier and happier in Philadelphia and getting more and more of what I want in Philadelphia,
right,
I wasn't tackling any of those three mountains. One of which is I wanted to live and work abroad. I was bit by the travel bug when I backpacked in Central and Eastern Europe in between high school and college. And since then, every summer, I had incorporated some sort of international experience, whether that was going to Israel on birthright or studying abroad in London or going and working in Chile for an internship.
Yeah.
And so it felt like while I was getting all these skills and while I was learning so much, I was doing well, meeting really nice people, and Philadelphia is a great city, there was a missing piece, which was this deep fulfillment of tackling one of these things that I knew that I wanted to do. And that's where I received, actually funny enough, a follow-up email from Remote Year saying, you've been accepted into round two of the Remote Year application process. And I was like, what? And then remembered that a year beforehand, I had submitted some web form somewhere saying that I was interested in this thing. And I emailed them back saying, are you sure? Like, I didn't apply again this year. And they're like, no, you're into the second round. Like, fill out this application. And this is about 7-8 months into my time in Philadelphia. And I realized, like, yeah, this is not tackling the global travel and working abroad thing right now. And this is this is a potential way to go and grab something that I really, really want. So I applied. I got in. And that's kind of where the adventure kind of even further kicks off for me.
So was this startup eMove? Because I remember you mentioned there was another company before that. So I'm just trying to make sure I have the timeline correct.
Got it. Yeah. So it is confusing. So this is when I was working at RJ Metrics, the business intelligence software provider. That's when I was based in Philadelphia before going remote and before joining Remote Year.
Yeah. And then you said they got acquired by Magento.
Yes. Just about... Actually, about 3 or 4 months after I had left RJ, they were acquired.
So we just talked about how you applied to the Remote Year program and then kind of forget about it, and they reached back out to you. Probably like a business development play right there.
But just in some email list somewhere, and like, you know, I received an automated MailChimp email, and it completely changed the course of my life. So yeah, I guess mission MailChimp. Accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you applied for the Remote Year program, you went through the application process, and then you got accepted. But it seems like you also switched companies during this time as well. So can you kind of give me the play-by-play? You wanted to go on Remote Year. Did RJ Metric, were they open to that, or did you have to find a different opportunity?
So that's a good question, and I think this is probably, for me, like, I think this story really gets complicated and interesting from here, and has been something, it's going to be something that I remember for the rest of my life. So I spoke with my managers and their managers at RJ, and it just wasn't going to be a good fit for me to go remote with the team based on the East Coast.
Right.
And with I was on the customer success team with the support hours aligning with the East Coast hours. And from there, all right, I had to kind of bite the bullet and say, what am I going to do? And that's about when I left RJ Metrics. It's around January of 2016. Now, to keep the timeline in perspective, that's with about a month to go before the start of Remote Year. So I have the entire month of February, and it also coincides at the end of my lease in Philadelphia. So I've moved back home, back in parents' basement, but this time felt a lot better. I was like, all right, I've done a lot of stuff. I'm tackling something. I'm trying to grasp for something that I really, really want.
Right.
An opportunity that will allow me to go in remote year. And I feel like I've gained a lot of skills and I've met a lot of people that can help me get there.
And this was a 2-year cycle before you came back to your parents' place, or right?
After I graduated, it's about a 1.5-year cycle. So 6 months of kind of bouncing around and doing all these things, taking online classes, a year working with RJ Metrics, now Magento BI, and then leaving RJ and trying to find the right opportunity that will allow me to do this.
That's a productive year.
Just bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Lots of stuff. And certainly professionally, it was a big year and I learned a ton. The next month in February was, I won't lie, but it was one of the most stressful periods of my life, because every day I woke up, I was just sending out job applications, like 5 job applications a day, and trying to find a remote opportunity, more in line probably with doing tech support for some SaaS product somewhere, right? Because I had experience doing the support work through RJ, as well as the kind of more consulting work of how to use a BI tool for data analysis. But I never anticipated getting a job in that. That's a role that lends itself in many cases towards being on the ground and having to work across business stakeholders, tap people on the shoulder, and acquire information very, very quickly. And after about 2 weeks of this and a couple opportunities where we're bubbling up, have had a couple interviews, I very fortunately receive a text message from one of my former colleagues at RJ Metrics, Tatiana. She's amazing and amazing for making this connection. She connects me to one of her clients, Emu, who has walked in the door and asked her if she knew anybody who could help them manage the software and help them with all the data stuff. I was texted on a Friday. I received a really warm intro, like the nicest email anyone has ever sent, and the nicest things anyone's ever said about me on that Friday. And Monday, I had a conversation with Ivan Ramirez, who's our CTO at eMove. And Tuesday, we were hammering out the details of how this would work out. So it's just really, really quick. And I owe this opportunity to both of them, for one, Tatiana, for seeing the opportunity and passing it along, and for Ivan for believing that I could do this work and do it, being open to the idea of me being remote.
Yeah.
And working with me to create all the systems, processes needed in order to have business intelligence at the company function well in an asynchronous remote environment.
Wow. It seems like one of those moments where all the stars align and you just know that this was meant to be, because, you know, there's really no other way to explain the series of events that kind of have transpired within the last 2.5 years for you, because it all seems like, I'm sure during the time it seemed like, you know, a lot of like, it wasn't a straight line, but looking back, it just seems like one thing just led to another. And now you're in the 12th month of remote year and you guys are in Ho Chi Minh City, right? In Vietnam.
Yes. That's yeah. Crazy. We're in Saigon right now.
In Saigon. Okay, great. So now it's time to get into the fun stuff, the travel experience. Now yes. you're on remote year. What were some of the expectations you had going into the program? And looking back, now you're almost at the tail end. Did it match the expectations, or there must be so many things, so many experiences
that I'd say that it's met and surpassed my expectations in every single way. One is because for me, remote year was a major vehicle towards doing something that I wanted to do. It just inherently, by allowing me to travel and work remotely, to be in these countries and working abroad, it was checking that box, I was climbing that mountain, and for the entire year I felt fulfilled. But on top of that, you know, what I've received has been enormous in terms of the community of people that are on the program.
Right.
So you pay a bunch of money and then show up in a city and you don't know who these people are going to be and what they're going to be like. But maybe there's some selection bias here, and that really, really cool people who are interested in adventure and adventurous opportunity and challenging themselves, they go for these types of opportunities. You never really know if that's actually going to be the person that you meet. I'm really amazed and happy to say that these people have quickly become a, well, I guess maybe not quickly, it's been 12 months, have become a family and very, very supportive of each other professionally, personally. And I think that the biggest advantage has been, or the biggest benefit that I've received from the program is from the stability awarded by having this group of people to process this experience and make meaning out of this experience with.
Yeah, and I think that's phenomenal because when I talked to Charles, he said that you guys, a cohort typically starts with like 70 people or something, right? And he says, now in month 12, you guys have pretty much the same number of people for the most part, right? You have around 60 people?
I think we're mid-50s or high 50s.
And that's... Yeah. That's pretty amazing. Right now I'm traveling with a group of people in like a similar type of program, but it's only like 10 people. So, you know, 50 people to me seems like, oh my God, how do you all fit in a restaurant or something?
Yeah, I think that was a problem that was sorted out over the first couple of months. So everybody wants to hang out together. It's kind of like freshman year of college in those couple months where everybody wants to meet each other and hang out all the time. But then you, not in a clicky way whatsoever, you start breaking off and having smaller groups and bringing people in, just having more intimate group gatherings with people, and you start going to different restaurants. And sometimes, you know, you get this, I've received the feedback when traveling to certain places, and it just so happens that another member of the cohort is there, somebody in a hostel might say, you know, your friends are here. Like, why aren't you hanging with your friends? And it's like, well, I've been seeing them for 10 months. So, you know, and I will see them, and they're amazing. And they are just as supportive of me doing my own thing and doing what I want as I am supportive of them doing their own thing, wanting to have their own plan of action.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about what it's actually like going to a different place every month for across an entire year. What are some of the challenges? What are some of the good things, the good and the bad, I guess?
Okay. So I'll start with the good, and I'll start with and then I'll end with the challenges. So the good is that there is always something amazing and new and novel and fantastic and unique to see. So excitement is always very, very high, and going from place to place, it feels, you know, you're in this constant state of growth, of things being mixed up, and it's exhilarating. And in my case, it's exhilarating. The other benefits of moving from place to place are also kind of mundane, new food, new coffee shops, a new style to check out, new ideas to confront, kind of going into that challenge side. And you're going on this new adventure with these amazing people, and you know that they are going to want to do crazy and amazing stuff with you. So, so it all feels, it's really fantastic, and there's a great energy moving from place to place. The challenges, I think there are two main challenges. One is just probably by the time at the end of the month, you just feel like you've found the social groups or areas of the city where you really, really jive and connect with. Maybe you've found a group of friends that you've started hanging out with that are local to the city. Maybe found something like love on on one of many dating apps, and you're saying goodbye to all of that at the end of the month. And that can be a big challenge, because you don't know if you're going to be back there again, and you feel like you've just gotten a good mental map of the city. The other challenge, I think, comes in after doing this for a really long time. And I think that this is where the year-long program becomes a little bit, comes into play here, is that by the end, at least in my case, I'm beginning to experience a little bit of travel fatigue. And I think it's the same thing. You meet a backpacker who's been traveling for 12 months, and they're sitting in the hostel, and all they want to do is just sit in the hostel and drink beer and do nothing. And you're like, there's a waterfall here. Like, let's go see it. Like, let's go to the beach. Let's go do that. And they're like, dude, I've seen 1,000 waterfalls. And I never imagined that I would be in that place. And I don't think I'm quite like that, but you do start feeling like it'd be nice to be somewhere for a little bit more of an extended period of time, process everything that you've seen, get into a routine, and maybe put your nose down on some work that requires a little bit more time and focus than all the change really allows you. So I'd say that even that those challenges are really met head on by the community that you have around you and the people you have around, great people you have around you, because it's not so much change. Even though you are moving from place to place, you still have the people around you who you love, and they love you and support you. And then the energy of other people is that they want to go and experience amazing things as well. And so even if you might not be able to bring yourself to go tackle that waterfall or hike that extra mountain, you have a bunch of people who want to do it and might have done the planning for it. You can take advantage of their planning and kind of build on each other's excitement to keep on going and keep on experiencing these places to the fullest.
Got it. And it's I've heard remote year being described almost like a tasting menu. You get a little taste of each place and then get a sense of what you like, what you don't like, so that afterwards, you can decide which of these places you want to go back to. So in that train of thought, what are some of the places that you enjoyed the most in the last 12 months and some of the places you weren't as thrilled about?
Okay. So it's going to be pretty funny. I'll flip that. I'll do the challenging ones first, because I think that's pretty funny, and I'll do the ones I really liked. My least favorite months on the program, not because they were not fun months, I had amazing experiences in these months. One was we went through London as part of our itinerary. Initially, we were going to go through Istanbul, but the climate has been changing there a little bit it's becoming a little less safe. Not necessarily if you're traveling alone, but if you're a group of 70 mostly Americans, I can see why why it would be it would be an easy decision to reroute out of there.
Sure.
So we were in London in July, a great month to be there. But because London is super, it's a metropolis, it's also very expensive, which means that our accommodations were very, very far away from the action. It was on the central line, but the central line tube that will kind of take you to all the main places that you want to be in the center. At the time, it wasn't running all night, so it meant if you were at a bar and you missed the last train, you were going to take a really expensive Uber ride home. So it was a challenge, not because of the city. And not because the city wasn't amazing. I'm going to be moving there, and I'm very excited to be moving there. Mm-hmm. It was because I think it's very, very challenging to experience London on a program like this and on a more typical digital nomad budget a more shoestring digital nomad budget. The other place is just due to weather. So we were in lovely, lovely Split, Croatia, which is an amazing, amazing place. But I think it was a little unseasonably cold when we were there in October. And so that made enjoying everything that you wanted to enjoy, the beach and the water, a little bit more difficult. Still went in the water. It was cold. It was great. But I think that going there, making sure to be a little bit more cognizant about weather is definitely an important thing for somebody who's location independent. The places that I loved the most were the places that absolutely blew my expectations away. And those were Belgrade, Serbia, and La Paz, Bolivia. So Belgrade blew me away because I think as an American, you have all these conceptions in your head of Serbia being maybe dangerous, or, maybe you see like movie villains who are from Serbia, and then you get to Belgrade and it's just, there's such a wealth of culture. The food is out of this world, and there's the city just has this kind of grit, this honest grit to it that some people in my cohort compared to Berlin a little bit. So really blew me away. Met fantastic people who really welcomed us in, welcomed a lot of the community in, and showed us around the city. In the case of La Paz, it was just one of the most extreme, beautiful months ever. And to have the infrastructure provided by Remote Year allowed us to experience this incredible country in a way that I would have had to take 2 to 3 weeks off of work to go do. And I could just take a weekend trip and go to these amazing, amazing, amazing spots that people dream about and make full vacations about. And I think it's just one of the most beautiful countries in the world for how diverse it is and the amazing spots that are there. So those two were my favorite, and the ones preceding London and Shower a little bit more challenging.
That's so cool. And the most interesting thing is that even the places you said were the most challenging, it wasn't like you didn't like those places. It was just extraneous factors. So it's crazy because it's like, you know, when I think about all the possibilities of Ford as a location independent individual, a digital nomad, it's like there's just so many places that I believe I could stay in for quite some time and enjoy. And it's just so easy to be overwhelmed by all those possibilities.
I will say that, you know, one of the benefits of the month is that it's really hard to get bored in a month. You know, so there's always really exciting stuff to see, and there's lots of stuff to do within a month and in that time frame. So I think, and especially because you're with a lot of people and because it's all new, there's a lot of energy to go take advantage of all that stuff. So I would say, you know, if you're planning for more long-term, like staying somewhere and living somewhere, I think that the experience that I had was somewhere between living there and traveling there. And like living there would definitely be a different experience where you've already seen these things. Maybe you've already done them in the first 2 months of you living there, and then you're interested in, you might be looking for other things that are important for your long-term lifestyle there.
Right. But let me phrase the question this way then. Well, are there any places that you visited in the last 12 months that you would consider living in? Maybe let's say 3 to 6 months. I think that's falls under the slow travel category.
Okay. Any places that I could imagine myself being for 3 to 6 months again?
Yeah.
Okay. I would say definitely London. And that's just because there's so much cultural amazing stuff there. Right. So even though that fell into the more challenging months, that's definitely there. I could see myself living in Belgrade. It's very comfortable, but also many cultural opportunities. I could see in Southeast Asia. I am wondering. I could imagine being very, very comfortable in Chiang Mai.
That's how I feel right now.
Yeah.
Super comfortable.
There's a ton of great infrastructure, great community, especially for digital nomads. And
yeah,
I mean, if I could go back to that Northgate Jazz Club, or I would do that in a heartbeat. That place is amazing. So
I've heard about that. I've heard about that. I have not gone yet. I haven't been going out much since I've been here.
It's just, I just go on a random night, man, and it's like surprisingly world-class jazz.
And awesome.
And it's highly recommended.
So that's really cool. Cause like, you know, when you think about visiting places, places that you really like, you have to also take into account the amount of time you're spending there. And it's cool to just see how when you change like the length of time, questions change as well. Moving on to the next question, what are your plans after remote year?
After remote year, I'm going to take a little bit of time and just do some solo travel around Southeast Asia.
All right.
Probably going to take some time off from work and enjoy this part of the world while I'm here. Because actually, surprisingly, while I've been traveling and it seems like, oh, this is like a permanent vacation, I've taken surprisingly little vacation days. And so I'm going to just take some time off and go back to the States, see family before moving
back.
Before
back moving. To your parents' basement, is it?
Back to the parents' basement, but it's en route to other things. And that's, I think, what makes all the difference. Be back there for a birthday celebration for my grandma, you know, see family. And then I think then it's on to London and ? Their eMove has been incredibly good to me in being supportive of not just this year, but in also recognizing that the remote work has been a big win-win in terms of for everybody. And so they are supporting a certain level of remote flexibility for me the coming year. So it's very possible that I go back to Belgrade for a week or go back to any number of places. I'd love to go to Spain and improve my Spanish.
Yeah, so that's awesome. You're going to be based in Europe. And I'd never really thought about Europe as a remote work destination because I always assumed, you know, Europe equals very expensive. But I feel like everyone I've talked to, they've kind of changed my perception completely.
Yeah, I'd say it's, yeah, I had the same thinking, but even places that feel more on the map, like for example, like Prague, they are surprisingly very, very, very affordable, lovely cities to live in with plenty of amenities and great infrastructure. And not everywhere is Paris, and not everywhere is London in terms of places in Europe.
Yeah, that's definitely right. So, final question: how can people listening learn more about you? How can they follow what you're up to and perhaps even pester you?
Perhaps even pester me. So I hadn't really thought of this question. So I will provide a non-personal email or a way to follow me if for you to just post in the podcast about this. At the moment, I have no blog and stuff like that. My social profile is pretty low. So
that's pretty unusual for a digital nomad.
Yeah, I'm just a guy who's really happy to be doing this and really, really fortunate. So more details to come.
Yeah, for sure. We'll follow up on that, and then I'll include everything in the show notes. But for now, I just wanted to really thank you for being on the podcast. I knew we had some internet connections a few weeks ago. That's part of the experience, I guess. But I'm also really thrilled that, you know, there's somebody else from the University of Chicago who's doing something like this, because I think, especially in the beginning of our conversation, we talked about how a lot of people who just graduated from college, and I think it's especially true for people from schools like the University of Chicago, where people have trouble really determining what they want to do. A lot of people get funneled into finance, into consulting, just because they want to continue down the path of like doing the right thing, that the path that's been laid out. And it's my sincere hope that through listening to your experiences and a little bit of my experiences, more people, maybe even our friends, will actually listen to what they're thinking and to pursue the lifestyle that they're really passionate about.
Yeah, I'd say if there's any takeaway from this past year, it's that for me, even when I had the potential of failing in that month where I was looking for a job to go on this program and kick off this lifestyle, I've never felt more fulfilled in really reaching for something that I thought was important and good for me. And even if I had failed, I would never have regretted that time spent trying to make it work. So I hope that this conversation and maybe helps somebody rethink where they're at and helps them reach for whatever their goal is.
Yeah. And thank you again. And I think we're going to be in Taiwan at the same time next month. So hopefully we have a chance to meet up.
Yeah, hopefully we catch up then.
And that's a wrap for my interview with Jeff. If you want to find out more about Jeff and his adventures, along with everything we talked about, visit theremotelifestyle.com/25. There you'll find the show notes for this week's episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Remote Podcast. Be sure to leave a review of the show so that I can continue to improve it. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit subscribe so you never miss out on an episode. If you're ready to take the leap and live the remote lifestyle, visit theremotelifestyle.com/remote to sign up for our free email course titled Become a Digital Nomad in 7 Steps, even if you have no idea where to start. The course will take you from sitting in your office wondering what to do with your life to having a plan of action to live and work remotely. So make sure you don't miss out by visiting theremotelifestyle.com/remote. That's all for now, and I'll see you in the next episode.